Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Schon viel über Kryptowährungen gehört, aber noch keinen richtigen Zugang gefunden? Der Einstieg in Kryptowährungen muss nicht kompliziert sein. Mit Xtrackers ETCs kannst du kostengünstig in die Zukunft investieren. Einfach übers klassische Depot. Auf xtrackers.de findest du viel Wissenswertes zu dieser spannenden Anlageklasse. Nimm deine finanzielle Zukunft selbst in die Hand. Schritt für Schritt mit Xtrackers. Investitionen unterliegen Risiken. Dieser Beitrag ist eine Werbemitteilung der DWS International GmbH, Frankfurt.
Immediately the rumors started.
The mysterious death of a legendary sports star.
There's this massive landslide of myth.
Legend of Tahti.
And somewhere in there is the truth.
Part of Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service. Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Seriously, where are you taking? We're completely off-road. What is this? Is this a village road?
Yeah, it is a dusty village road, and I don't think it's a good idea to drive from here. So, and that's the end of the village, and we're just about to get out of the car and walk from here.
Okay. I'm currently in Poland, and we're at the edge of a village called Chobot, which is about an hour's drive from Warsaw. That just speaking was Dr. Aleksandra Janos, but everyone affectionately calls her Ola, a Polish cultural anthropologist with a Jewish background. She's taking me on what some might say is an adventure, but I have a feeling it's going to be more like a journey. Well, I don't think you'd actually know what you're looking at unless you know what you're looking at. It's a big field with different kinds of trees and overgrown plants. Lots of different kinds of birds are here, and a muddy track.
You know where you're going?
Yes, I think so. I hope so.
So we should go straight ahead to the forest.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm laughing because I'm nervous. I don't just normally walk into a forest. That's Aleksandra Schwartz. They work together, and he's guiding us through the tracks, oaks, and pine trees with his dog, Yuzha. My name is Amy Leibowitz, and you're listening to the documentary on the BBC World Service. In this episode of Heart and Soul, which explores personal approaches to faith, I'm looking into the life of Aleksandra Janos and her quest to both bury the dead and re-sanctify Jewish spaces across Poland. Ola is the president of the Zapomniana Foundation, which means forgotten in English. Alex is the co-founder, and alongside their team, they locate burial sites of Holocaust victims in unmarked graves. An unmarked grave could be in a forest, in a concentration camp, or perhaps in someone's backyard.
Yeah, so it's here. And you can already see the wooden sign over there. So we're going to come closer and we're going to tell you the story behind this place.
Wow, it's really... Okay, well, we're quite off-road.
Yeah, so, you know, it makes perfect sense that this place is located off-road because this used to be a forest dugout that Jews who were hiding here created when they were trying to survive the Holocaust here. And we know the story behind this site. So you can see there is a little slope here. So that's more or less where the dugout was. So they created this shelter for themselves that sadly became also their burial site.
The wooden sign is a temporary tombstone, or matseva. When I see their work, it makes me think of this custom that states that a matseva is a resting place for the nefesh, the part of our soul that is connected to our body and the physical world. So until a matseva is placed, the soul is just floating about, and by signifying this, they're helping them out almost 80 years later. But is there another way to spiritually heal lost souls across Poland? There's more to Jewish history than just death. Jewish people have been in Poland for over 1,000 years, and it was filled with Jewish life, with music, food, community and prayer. Synagogues function not only as a prayer hall, but for people to gather, to share life with one another. So when Ola found out that a synagogue was on the market, she had to consider a way for her to bring life, as well as cultural and religious meaning to it. But first, the burial. They were telling me that 12 people were murdered here. But how could they possibly know all of this?
I go with the witness and I learn from the witness about the location. It depends. Sometimes those indications are precise, very precise, and sometimes not. I've learned over the years to work the memory of those people that are showing us those places.
Using a witness statement is like gold to the pair. But as survivors get older, it's not as easy as it looks. What helps them is the knowledge and memory stored by the local, non-Jewish Polish populations. The team also uses forensic analysis and non-invasive methods like radar, photos and maps. The most important thing about the search is that it's not invasive, and that's because, according to Jewish law, the Talmud says it is forbidden to move the dead and their bones from the place where they rest.
Here. I mean, right now, yeah. I'm looking at a empty space with some shrubbery, and it kind of looks like a odd circle.
This is a place where the victims from the dugout were buried after they were shot.
Yeah.
So they are just, this is a burial site where most probably, to the extent to which we can be sure without disturbing the burial, this is where their remains are still
buried. The human remains would be here, yes. So if you're asking what's underneath, probably the bones of the victims. This is what we are indicating, and this is what we believe in. But without digging, it's never 100%.
Before dropping me home, Ola and I went to her apartment and hung out. Whilst reflecting on the day, it became clear to me why Ola would consider buying a synagogue. She likes to take care of things, monuments, people that may have been considered forgotten.
So I have this childhood memory of my father taking me to a Jewish cemetery that looked nothing like a Jewish cemetery. It was just an empty plot of land, telling me that this is a Jewish cemetery, and made me have all these questions about why this place looks the way it looks. And, you know, as a child, you don't necessarily understand all the things that led up to how this place looks. And then I think ever since that time, I sort of felt this is not right. This place shouldn't look the way it looks. And this feeling of, like, the need to make a difference, the need to change that, sort of stayed with me. And I think, you know, and when my friend Karolina first mentioned to me that there is the synagogue for sale, I felt, okay, so this is an opportunity to actually do something about this and change something. And I think in all the things that I do, I'm trying to make a difference that can create meaning, not only for, like, people in the past, but just, you know, people here in this society. And I think it sort of connects back to that early memory. And by the way, with my colleagues from the organization, we visited that very cemetery that my father took me to when I was a child, and we marked it. And this was a very important moment for me because I felt, okay, so I, you know, I came all the way back to this place to try and make a difference.
Okay, so I went into Google Maps. I had a look around. There's not a lot in the area. There is a bakery that has a lot of 5 stars that I hope we get to visit. But are there even Jews that are living in this village? You know, I can kind of imagine some backlash being like, do you really want to spend money on this? When is there even a community there? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, so definitely there are no Jews in the village. It is a challenge, but I think, you know, thinking about this particular space as something that functions on multiple levels, on this local level, also being open to the local community, the people who just live there and might enjoy having like a cultural center or, you know, a community space there, but also, you know, being a destination for people coming from elsewhere. Because this is a very interesting part of Poland with a very interesting history, German, Polish, Jewish. And this is a place where this story can be told. But at the same time, we can create a space for the local people where they can connect, interact, be together. We would have to investigate their needs and check what they actually need. Maybe a community space, maybe a cultural center, maybe a library.
The next day, we set off heading south of Poland. Aircon is blaring as we're still dealing with the heatwave, heading into what's known as the borderlands. This area was German territory before World War II, and it became a part of Poland in 1945. The village we're driving to is called Wielowieś, formerly known as Langendorf, which is in Upper Silesia, north of Katowice. On the way, we pick up Ola's friend, Karolina Jakoveniko, who I've heard so much about. Her and her husband, Peter, run the Brahma Sukramana Foundation, which aims to preserve Jewish heritage, particularly in the Dąbrowa Basin and Upper Silesia. After speaking to her in the car and learning about her work, it's no surprise she told Ola about the synagogue. She's definitely that friend that helps you make all the best and out there choices in life.
2 years ago, we had a meeting here. I mean, the people from the region came, like 200 people or even more, and also local from here, from Wielowieś, former Langensdorf. And they were speaking about the Jews, how it was, what they know from their grandparents. So
there is local memory.
It's not, you know, hidden place. It's very huge building.
It's actually the biggest building in this village, so it's hard to ignore. So we are here. And we can go inside. Ready?
Ready.
So you may be thinking, besides being on the market, why is Ola and Karolina interested in purchasing the synagogue? It's a unique historical building. After Hitler rose to power, acts of anti-Semitic violence took place in the town, where stones were thrown and Judaica was stolen. On the 1st of November 1938, the Jewish community sold the synagogue to a local merchant named Franz Bialik. This prevented the destruction of the building during Kristallnacht, which is the Nazi terminology for Night of the Broken Glass. The interior was still damaged, and it was later used as a storage facility, altering its architecture. After World War II, when the town became Polish, it continued to serve as a grain storage unit, and at some point, it stopped being used and remained empty. Before the fall of the wall, a woman purchased the rabbi's house, not knowing its significance, and that the synagogue was included in the deed. The synagogue became a part of the family property, now owned by Lysia, who wishes to sell it. This synagogue is the only one in the region to have survived World War II.
Wow, this is really pretty. So, I'm standing at the synagogue. It's on a village road, as they call it. Ah, here's the owner.
Alicia came from her house next door. She kindly said yes to an interview, but she still wasn't quite sure what to make of it all. Karolina went to explain to her what we wanted to see, as Ola gave me the rundown of the synagogue.
There's roosters. This is amazing.
Yeah, there's roosters and there are birds living inside the synagogue. And you can see that there are windows there that were covered. So you can see like the round shapes of the arcs of the windows. So sort of like the, even though the building has been changed, you can still see the traces of the original architecture, like these arcs over here.
As we enter the synagogue, we swiftly walked around the place, dodging pigeons and broken bits of flooring. We walked up the small staircases, and the four of us are standing on the top floor of the synagogue. Covered in dust, you can still see a mixture of the original synagogue's blue palette, with Hebrew letters peering through bits of plaster. On one of the top windows, there's still a functional pulley that was used to get grain in and out of the warehouse. Layers of material functioned like a material witness to history. After showing me around, Alicia agreed to answer some of my questions. So what has it been like owning the synagogue for you and your family?
If I'm being honest, you know how it is. I've only had a problem with it from the very beginning, because I understand that for people who are fascinated by history and so on, for someone it's valuable. But for me, because the synagogue needs repairs, if something had happened earlier, I would have been responsible for it. And for me, it was really always such a ticking bomb. Because if it had, I'm not talking about something falling on someone's car, but if something fell on someone's head, some bodily harm, you know, I would be responsible for all that. Now it's already in such a state, let's say, taken care of, for now nothing is falling down. But who knows, maybe soon plaster will start falling and things like that.
But I think she is very honest with us that it's still a problem somehow. Yeah. So the point is just to sell the synagogue to the people, right? People who would take care of this place.
And take responsibility. And obviously, I think also no private person should own a monument like this. I mean, this, you know, buildings like this should be owned by either public institutions, or if they are in private hands, they are in private hands of people who have resources and vision for what this place can be. And being caught up in a situation like this is just, you know, probably a challenge for any person who ends up being in such a situation.
I mean, you never know. You might, in a few years' time, come to Leventia.
I'll say it honestly, even though for my whole life it has been such a nuisance, since it hasn't been demolished yet, I would like to see it restored the way it once looked and for everyone to benefit from it.
My name is Amy Leibowitz, and you're listening to The Documentary on the BBC World Service.
Schon viel über Kryptowährungen gehört, aber noch keinen richtigen Zugang gefunden? Der Einstieg in Kryptowährungen muss nicht kompliziert sein. Mit Xtrackers ETCs kannst du kostengünstig in die Zukunft investieren. Einfach übers klassische Depot. Auf xtrackers.de findest du viel Wissenswertes zu dieser spannenden Anlageklasse. Nimm deine finanzielle Zukunft selbst in die Hand. Schritt für Schritt mit Xtrackers. Investitionen unterliegen Risiken. Dieser Beitrag ist eine Werbemitteilung der DWS International GmbH, Frankfurt.
911, what is your emergency?
Most towns have a local celebrity.
Who is it that's missing?
It's my dad. He went out into the water.
An eccentric known throughout the community.
Inverness market trader Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Inverness revolved around Kim in a way.
Difference is, the local eccentric from my hometown made international headlines.
The man's son reported he disappeared in treacherous water.
Search and rescue teams thought they had yet another drowning on their hands. Or did they?
The story's not adding up.
He is completely unhinged.
It was violent. It was controlling. It was sadistic.
Dead Man Running, wherever you get your podcasts.
On this episode of Heart and Soul, I'm looking into the life of Ola Janos and her quest to both bury the dead and re-sanctify Jewish spaces across Poland. She's come across an opportunity to acquire a historical synagogue, but should she purchase it? After going to the synagogue, Ola drove Karolina and I to a town called Benzin, known for its role in the Jewish resistance. Karolina's foundation currently looks after Jewish heritage buildings. She has a potential new project that she thought Ola might help her with, and that can influence Ola's decision-making on if she should purchase the synagogue or not. They didn't give me any particular details. They kept it as a surprise for me to experience it myself. So we're on just your average street. What am I actually looking at?
So we're at an area that used to be a Jewish ghetto in Benzin, And what you're looking at is a very long, narrow plot of land with a house down there, so down the hill. So we're going to walk down the hill now.
All right.
As you can see, the house is a mess because it hasn't been used for a long time. And
wow, have you made it into like a little museum?
Yeah, there is a little exhibition that is dealing with the history of this house, which is the house underneath which a Jewish combat organization had a hideout. And probably there was a tunnel leading up to a bunker that is located in the garden. We don't know if it's still there. There will be an archaeological study conducted very soon. But for the moment, what we know is this: that this is where members of the Jewish combat organizations were hiding and where some of them died.
This house is not just a house. It's the site of the Benjamin Ghetto Act of Resistance. Youth resistance fighters of the Jewish Combat Organization used to store weapons, house fighters, and exchange information in the house until it became a part of the front line itself. In 2012, Carolina recorded a testimony with Mrs. Maria Polak, one of the owners of the house. Little did she know the significance that was about to unfold.
Maria Polak was born in 1926, so during the wartime she was already a teenager. And she and her parents were living here. When the German established here, in this suburbs of the city, we called it Kamionka district of Benjin. It was very neglected and poor district where Poles were living. They transport the Poles to the center of the city and the Jews from the center here. They let Polak family stayed here because they have some fields and they produce some food. Maybe they had some deals with German or whatever, they produce the food, so they let them stay here.
To be clear, the Polaks were not a Jewish family, but they chose to live in the ghetto because they wanted to keep their house. Originally, this house was well placed, but due to war and neglect over the years, this house has become only remnants of what used to be here. The Polaks were allowed to stay here until the ghetto was closed by the Nazis. The final liquidation of the ghetto started on the 1st of August 1943, and Maria's mother decided to come back to check in on her property during the liquidation of the ghetto.
Mrs. Maria's mother asked the German who was standing there, who was standing just next to the house, what is going on here? And he said, do you want to see? Is your heart strong enough? And she said, what do you mean? And he said, come, this house, this German said, this house will go to the history. And then when she crossed the fence, she saw the bodies were lying in the grass, and that broke her heart. And that's why we know that this bunker was here. And the Germans shoot young resistance, people from the resistance movement, here in this courtyard, in this garden. The bodies were there.
Their bodies were dragged from the inside and put in a row for people to collect their remains to be burnt in Auschwitz. Carolina wants to re-sanctify the Polak's home into a museum, and hopefully her foundation will sign the papers to buy it from the Polak family. I'm staring at photos on a wall from the 1940s and a commemorative plaque installed by survivors honouring friends from youth organisations who died there. This is the first Holocaust memorial in this part of Poland and the second in the country after the Warsaw Ghetto Memorial.
Can you imagine in 1947, young survivors from Warsaw, Częstochowa, Zagłębie also are asking this Polish family, can we put this marble plaque here? And they allowed to do it.
Young survivors in 1947 asked Maria and her family if they could put this plaque in Hebrew, Yiddish and Polish on the side of their house. Carolina guided us to the plaque and we stood there admiring it.
I will read it, okay? Yeah. So, the day of 3rd of August 1943 were killed in this bunker on this garden in the equal fight with the Hitler army, let's say. They were killed in the fight of freedom, dignity of the Jewish nation and independent Poland and a freedom of whole humanity. Their memory will last forever.
So this is really moving because it says that, so you have this like very universal message. And from what we know, and we are now in the garden, we're going to probably go to the basement. But most probably the bunker was located in this part of the garden.
So there was a barn. And under the barn was not a bunker, but there was a small basement. Maria Polak is mentioning that we had a basement under the bunker. So they dig from the one basement to the second basement a tunnel.
They took me into the basement using our phone as flashlights. It's cold, wet, and there's a bit of trash underneath. All I could think about was how gases filled the space to scare the fighters out, leading to their deaths.
So the plans for the house is to renovate it in a proper, with a respect to the past, to always have in the back of our heads the history of this house. This is our aim. We are buying this place to protect the place, unique, and the history, and these things, this is what happened here. And we want to commemorate this place as a space for education and also as a small museum which will tell the story of the place, of the ghetto, of the war, and of the end of the history of Jews from Benjin.
After finishing up at the house, Karolina stayed around for meetings with Polish government officials who she's hoping will collaborate with the foundation to turn the house into a museum. Ola and I started our long drive back to Warsaw. Even the next day, when driving me to the airport, we couldn't gather all of our thoughts. So I asked her if she would send me a voice note when she's ready. And a few weeks later, she did just that.
Hi, Amy. I'm not sure if you've heard, but Karolina and Piotr have signed the papers. They bought the ghetto house. I'm really looking forward to collaborating with them in turning this place into an institution. At the same time, it is clear that I cannot embark on another side project of that scale at the same time. And, you know, there is a certain sense of urgency related with the ghetto house. While the synagogue is protected, it is officially registered as a monument, the ghetto house is not, at least not yet. And being committed to the mission of my own organization and understanding the sheer scale of that heritage, I think, you know, the right strategy is to collaborate, to join forces and try making a difference one step at a time.
I can understand the reasoning behind not wanting to buy the synagogue in the end. Even with a coalition of support, it would have been an enormous task. And now there's the ghetto house to look after. What such monuments need is a collaboration between Jewish and non-Jewish institutions alongside the Polish government. Because once we all recognize that Jewish history is Polish history, as a community, we can continue to empower ourselves and teach important lessons along the way. This episode of Heart and Soul was presented by me, Amy Leibowitz, and the series producer is Rajiv Gupta.
Schon viel über Kryptowährungen gehört, aber noch keinen richtigen Zugang gefunden? Der Einstieg in Kryptowährungen muss nicht kompliziert sein. Mit Xtrackers ETCs kannst du kostengünstig in die Zukunft investieren. Einfach übers klassische Depot. Auf xtrackers.de findest du viel Wissenswertes zu dieser spannenden Anlageklasse. Nimm deine finanzielle Zukunft selbst in die Hand. Schritt für Schritt mit Xtrackers. Investitionen unterliegen Risiken. Dieser Beitrag ist eine Werbemitteilung der DWS International GmbH, Frankfurt.
911, what is your emergency?
Most towns have a local celebrity.
Who is it that's missing?
It's my dad. He went out into the water.
an eccentric known throughout the community.
Inverness market trader Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Inverness revolved around Kim in a way.
Difference is, the local eccentric from my hometown made international headlines.
The man's son reported he disappeared in treacherous water.
Search and rescue teams thought they had yet another drowning on their hands. Or did they?
The story's not adding up.
He is completely unhinged.
It was violent. It was controlling. It was sadistic.
Dead Man Running, wherever you get your podcasts.